The class, the course. The course this semester is Machon, not an eighth year of Jewish history. Which I might as well admit up front is not my area of special expertise. In the past, I've given classes here on educational psychology, which I feel is something I know quite well, and the public speaking, which is something I have some ideas about. Jewish history, Rabbi Augustine felt that somebody really needed a course in Jewish history. And he had some difficulty with some of the people who taught it in the past. They had other things going on, and I couldn't make it in the middle of the day or whatever. So he asked me if I'd give it a shot. So I will. He agreed with a couple of tonight. The one tonight is that we stick to recent Jewish history. And the other tonight is that I can count a certain amount of participation from students so that it won't just be my lecturing. And the third tonight was that be able to look at some general ideas, general theories, and not stick so much to facts, like names, dates, and places. I'm not expert in names, dates, and places, and I'd rather say something happened, 1490, give or take 20 years, than be pinned down to a date on most things. So let's begin with the first tonight. First tonight that I asked for was to be able to stick with recent Jewish history because I've read a lot about it. By recent Jewish history, he asked me what I meant. Like, I mean, since 1960, what's recent Jewish history? Obviously, Jewish history has been going on for a long time, since Avraham Avinu, or arguably even before that. So, when we speak about recent Jewish history, I'm going to be talking about the last 500 years. From the year of the Spanish Inquisition, which was the year 1492, until now, which is almost 1992. So it's exactly 500 years. And we'll be looking at those 500 years in a number of different ways. We're not just going to go like, start in the year 1492 and every session cover another 50 years until we've done 20 sessions or whatever, and then we'll call it quits. I'd like to look at the last 500 years in view of a number of different things. One is in view of the whole big parrot of Yisrael ben Mohammed, Ram Yisrael among the nations. That's one perspective that we're going to look at. The other perspective we're going to look at is Golos and Gevura. The third perspective we're going to look at is the history of Torah in these 500 years. Finally, something which is really something I'm just starting to read about, I think it's important, that is the social and economic conditions of Am Yisrael in these 500 years. All right. So we're going to look at these 500 years, the 500 years from 1492 to 1992. By the time we finish, it'll be 1992. From these four perspectives. And let me begin today by telling you what I mean by these four perspectives, giving you some examples of the kind of stuff we'll be looking at. Yisrael ben Ha'amim. As I'll say, and what's one of the most powerful and accurate phrases that can be used to describe the Jewish existence in Golis in general, but in the past 500 years, maybe more so than any time since the Churban, is that we are like a seh ben shivim ze'eder, and we are like a sheep among 70 wolves. And the whole nace of our existence is that we exist as a sheep among 70 wolves. And that's a very short phrase, four words, seh ben shivim ze'eder. But there's a lot, an awful lot of emes packed into those four words. And in terms of history, there are at least two that I must stress. Number one, a seh, with even one ze'ev, is helpless. The sheep is helpless. The sheep can't fight back against the wolf. And so for most of this time, or this 500 years, the Jews were helpless in the physical sense. Obviously, in the spiritual sense, we're never helpless. We have somebody on our side, someone on our side that can easily take on Shivim Ze'ev. But in the pure physical, material, historical sense, we were helpless during this period of time. And this helplessness had a lot to do with a lot of the historical facts of our existence. The helplessness was throughout the Gullus, 1500 years or so before 1492, Jews experienced helplessness. But there are a few key events in this 500-year period where the helplessness was total. Right? One was the events of 1492 themselves, the events of the Spanish Inquisition, when a significant part of the minyan and binyan of Am Yisrael was living in Spain, thriving in Spain. Gedolei HaRishonim lived in Spain. And in 1 year, and really in a very short time, in several days, were all expelled from that country, a country they had lived in for hundreds and hundreds of years, and had their roots in, and had their economic support in, and had their yeshivos in, and had their everything in, and where they were even politically influential. And all that didn't help, nothing helped, and in their total helplessness, they were cast out of Spain to go nowhere. There's nobody, of course, who came to their aid, who just sent them to the sea, and complete helplessness. That's the condition of being a seh. Helplessness. The other condition of being a seh ben shivim ze'evim is not only you're outnumbered 7-1, but you've got no ally. Alright? It's one thing to be two sheep among 70 wolves. That wouldn't be so bad. Still be outnumbered 70-2. But the experience of being alone, 70-1, with no ally, that experience is also a
see if you had a minimum registration.
Looks good.
Hi. I just want to say hello. I'm Rabbi Oberstein. We won't see you too much in this case, but the rules are you're supposed to have your application filled out and given to a barrel, and you're supposed to approve your being. If you're married, I don't think that rule applies. Okay. That's it. The other courses are starting, and I can't guarantee you what courses will be offered each year. So if there's something offered that you need or that you want, my advice is to take it when you can, because Lav Dafka will be offered next year.
You'll get a list of them. You'll have to pass around.
Yeah. Okay. The second point I wanted to make, okay, Seh is helpless. Seh and Shivim Ze'evim is completely alone, without any support, without any allies. And this, of course, is Hein Am Levodot Yishkon, Betach Vodot Ein Yaakov, Am Yisrael are alone. They go it alone. And not only helpless, but they're alone. Even in those periods of time, during these 500 years, when we weren't so helpless, physically, historically, but like maybe arguably right now, not completely helpless, part of us has a nation, an army, but alone we still are. And what's so, so poignant about these 500 years of 1492 is that we begin by looking at Spain, and right now, we're back in Spain. Or this past week or so, we were back in Madrid, in Spain, which, by the way, is a country where there was a cherem, still is an existing cherem, not to return to Spain because of the events of 1492. What I want to stress is, when we speak of Yisrael ben Ha'amim, there are two conditions that, tragic conditions that you find without exception. Helplessness and isolation. That's number one. Number two, you can't look at Jewish history purely as a secular historian might. Even, it's interesting, even secular historians don't look at Jewish history as they look at the history of the French or the Chinese or whatever. Because even in secular books on Jewish history, the concepts of galus, diaspora, exile, whatever term is used, and geula, redemption, or whatever term is used, are built into the way that historians look at Jewish history. This is very striking. Even the most apikoursish of Jewish historians, even goyish of Jewish historians, comment on the aspects of the Jewish existence in these 500 years that can only relate to a concept of galus. Because during these 500 years, the experience that Jews had was that they're not in their own place, that they're in galus. And that not only they're not in their own place, but they're not in their own place because of divine reasons, punishment or Hashem's plan or whatever. There's this sense of galus. There are times when people lose the sense of galus in their heads because they think that they're in a safe place. But historically, certainly in these 500 years, the Jews are always in galus. Then, during these 500 years, we begin to see signs of geula. As tragic as these 500 years are, despite all the terrible darkness and pain and suffering of these 500 years, there's not a year in this 500 years that there aren't more signs of geula from year to year. And that's why it's so fascinating that even the year 1492, which was the year of the expulsion of the Jews from Spain, was the year of the discovery of America. I mean, it's one of the, if you're not a ma'amin, it's one of the weirdest coincidences out there. Wash at the Dafka in the same year that Ferdinand and Isabella expelled the Jews from their country is the year that Columbus, who many argue with may have been a Jew himself, set out to discover America. The Shaychus is a Shaychus in terms of Geula, because one of the big events of these 500 years is the movement of the Jews to the American continent, which began, Columbus was a Jew or had Jews aboard right then in 1492, and even if he were, it wasn't, in the early 1500s, there were already Jews in the American continent. By the 1600s, there were even settlements of Jews, and of course, by the 1800s, and now in the 1900s, America is arguably the most important locale for the greatest number of Jews, with the exception of, possible exception of Eretz Yisrael, although in numbers, probably there are more Jews in America than Eretz Yisrael. The whole concept of Golus and Geula is interwoven in these 500 years. And everything that we look at, whether it's a fact or a war or a persecution or a building of a city or an economic disaster or economic success, anything that happens in these 500 years has to be looked at from the point of view of Golus and Geula. Let's move on to Torah. One of the the aspect of the Jewish people that is not bound to time and to place is Torah. Everything else historically about Jewish people has to do with a certain time or a certain place. Beis HaMikdash, our own land, the Sanhedrin, all of these things were things that are limited in time and place historically. Even different aspects of our intellectual culture, philosophy, poetry, etc., are things which are, you know, in some places, and sometimes there was more poetry than other times. The piyutim, the secular poems that the Rishonim wrote, there were times in history where they were written, like in the 1100s and 1200s, and times in history when they're hardly written, like nowadays, and like in the 15 and 1600s. The same thing is true for philosophy, for Jewish attainment in other areas. It's something which there are some years when it's on, some years when it's off. Torah, amazingly, is something that's always on. Always on from the beginning of Torah. But even in these 500 years, when Jews are wandering, when Jews are persecuted, when Jews are suffering, when Jews are poor as can be, there is always a development of Torah, and a growth of Torah, and a struggle around Torah. And that's part and parcel of Jewish history. To speak of Jewish history without looking at the history of Torah, you just can't do it. In fact, you can argue that in those places where Jews lived, settled, and there was no Torah, they had no kiyum. There's no history to study, because there is no history. They don't survive beyond one generation, and there's no history. And I'm not speaking here, you know, from a religious point of view. I'm trying to speak just from a historical point of view. There is no kiyum unless there is Torah. Kiyum is history. Kiyum gives you something to study over years, over generations. And Torah is what gives that kiyum. So that it becomes easy, for example, to try to study these 500 years from the point of view of Torah, right? To locate the centers of Torah learning, the centers of yeshivos. It becomes tempting to look at these 500 years from the point of view of the Gedolei Torah who lived in these 500 years. Which ones lived when? And we'll be doing that. One thing I want to say is that sometimes the Gedolei Torah that one knows about, hears about, learns about, were instrumental in history, not only in a Torahdic way, but in their influence on social and economic conditions. And sometimes Gedolei Torah are not directly connected with social and economic conditions. All right? Certain Gedolim played a great part in community affairs, political affairs. Certain Gedolim did not. And we'll be looking at that, at those kinds of questions, which ones did and which ones didn't. And we'll raise the question of, did those who didn't participate actively in political and community affairs, did they have an impact on history, or did they not? And what's fascinating is that often precisely those Gedolim who did not actively participate in political, community, and social affairs had the greatest impact on history. Outstanding example within these 500 years of that would be the Gaon. Vilna Gaon had no position. He was not appointed. He never met with the government. He never went to public meetings. He wasn't involved in a direct sense in political and economic conditions and social conditions. And yet, can't be argued that he had a tremendous impact, not just on Torah learning, that's obvious, but he had a tremendous impact on a lot more than just Torah. The way Jews live, the way Jews think, where Jews live, where Jews think, etc. All right. The final